So Chumash Vayikra is challenging for all of us. It's hard for us to relate to this because it hasn't been part of everyday life for a very, very long time. The truth is that if none of us would eat meat, and you would hear about people who ate meat 2,000 years ago, it would also sound very strange. You have to chop up the chicken and make chicken soup. You would like, who does that? But at any rate, that's a mitzvah in the Torah. And Chumash Vayikra opens with the description of how God would communicate to Moshe Rabbeinu. We hear about the unique nature of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. And then from there, we go on to hear about the Korban Ha'olah, the ascent offering. And the Torah speaks about the animals that are brought as offerings, the Korban of the cow, the goat, or the sheep. And in the second reading of Parshas Vayikra, we turn our eyes towards winged offerings. So this is chapter 1. The verse we begin with today is 14, beginning of Sheni. The Torah says, "Ve'im min ha'oif oila korbone." And if that offering, that ascent offering, is from a bird. Now it does start off ve'im with a vav, and this obviously some kind of a continuation over here. So we learned earlier that there are certain animals that are going to be disqualified, proscribed from being brought as offerings. They could be like something which is set aside for an immoral purpose or something which is used for idolatry, an animal that's sick or dying, an animal that's old, not really anymore functioning anymore, an animal who is a trefa, which means it was torn or injured, and as such, its life is limited, an animal that's stolen. These are all things we talked about earlier with regard to the behemoth. And we're told that all of these are proscribed from bringing as a carbon. So the Or HaChaim says the reason that the Sheni, the second reading, begins with Vav, Ve'im, is to tell you that the same applies here as well. And if Ola Korbano, and if it is an Ola, an ascent offering, so from here we know that a bird is kosher for an Ola, for an ascent offering, but, says the Teres Kayanim, not kosher for a Shlomim, for a peace offering. Teres Kerenim further says, "Im oila karbonoi," that the ola of the bird does not come from the community. It cannot be a communal offering. Only animals are communal offerings. This is ola karbono, his offering. Only private individuals can bring birds as offerings. So that's a little bit of an almost like a preface or a preamble or an introduction to the karbonot of the birds, the winged offerings. Let's take a look in Rashi. He says, so if it is min ha'of, if it is from the bird, Rashi says, here also we use the word min. And in the first reading of Chumash Vayikra, we place tremendous emphasis and meaning on the word im. Min means from. And it means from, but not all. V'loy kol ha'if, not all birds. Lefi shenemar, because it says, tomim zachar babakar, it speaks about the animal being intact, a perfect specimen. And it speaks about the gender. There's an emphasis on the gender for the animal to bring a kosher korban, and that's beksavim. Uve izim, that's with regard to the sheep and goat. So here we learn that tamus vizachros, the emphasis on perfect specimen, and the emphasis on gender of the animal, is only bebehema. However, vein tamus vizachros beifis, that's not applicable to birds. And that's why it says, so what does min ha'if mean? So yochel, you would think, af mechusar ever, that even if the bird is missing a leg or a wing, it could still be brought as a korban. Talmud leimer min ha'if. We're not as selective when it comes to birds. Generally speaking, birds are accepted in a wider fashion. However, we still say min ha'if, not all, only some, from the birds. Which birds can be brought from amongst the fowl? We know not over 99% of birds are actually biblically kosher, even though we don't eat birds unless we can actually identify them as birds that our ancestors ate. So if it comes min ha'toidim, if it comes from turtle doves, or min b'nei ha'yoyno, or if it comes from the pigeons, korbanei. So Rashi says that toidim, that if the bird is going to be a turtle dove, so you should know that when it comes to toidim, it doesn't say the word b'nei, it doesn't say the offspring of, it just says tur. And the reason is because gedolim v'lektanim, the turtle doves can only be brought when they are mature and not when they are still fledglings. But b'nei ha'yena, When it comes to the pigeons, the Torah says, doesn't say Yona, but it says Bnei HaYona, the offspring, because there it wants you to know that it's Ketanim V'Legdelim, only small pigeons can be brought. Once the pigeons are mature, they can no longer be brought as an offering. So mature turtle doves and very young pigeons, that's what can be brought as an offering. The Gemara talks to us about this idea of the wings turning yellow. It says Mishiyas Hivu, like a golden kind of color. And the golden color indicates that the bird is maturing. So the turtle dove can only be brought only after the wings have this kind of gold shine to it. There's a yellowing of the wings. That's when we know that it's mature enough. Whereas when it comes to the pigeons, once the wings start to yellow, so then we know there's nothing to talk about. It can no longer be brought as a carbon. And that's kind of like the sign. And Tchilas Tzihuv, the beginning of its having this yellow sheen to it, is no good either way, because that's like an in-between period, so that doesn't work. All right, this is some of the operating principles of the winged offering, or the fowl offerings. Min ha-toyrim, oy min b'nei ha-yoyna. So Rashi says, the terminology min from, with regard to the birds, Prat l'tchilas hatziuv. This comes to rule out the beginning of the yellow or golden color. Shebazeh or shebazeh. So when they start to turn yellow, when the wings start to yellow, then it's no good either way. Because it's either not fully mature or not fully small anymore. So gadol hu etzel b'nei yena. Once it starts to yellow the wings, it's already considered mature for the pigeon, and that's no good. V'kot and etzel terim. But since it only started to turn yellow, but for the turtle dove, it's also no good. And that's the halacha with regard to the bird. And the Torah says that this is something that has to be brought in the Krivei HaKoyen, verse 15. The Kohen has to bring this close to the Mizbeach. Umolak es reishoi. The Kohen has to kind of nip him in the neck, literally kind of like... I don't know what the terminology of Mogad is. The Kohen, you'll see, forces the head off, kind of like literally nips the head off the bird. The hikter amizbecha, and he's brought it onto the mizbech. The nimtza domei al kir amizbech. The blood is squeezed on the wall of the mizbech. So this is not so appetizing. The hikrivei. The Kohen brings him close to the mizbech, and the reason we say it's singular is to teach you, afilu pereda achas. Even a single bird, Yavi, can be brought. Not only a pair of birds, even a single bird. Hakoyen ummolak. So Rashi tells us that hakoyen ummolak means that there's a very unusual form of killing the bird, which is different than the way we kill other kosher animals. Ein malika bekli. The first thing you have to know is, although shchita always requires a shchita knife, malika does not require any keli. There's no instrument in hand. Ella ba'atzmei shel kohen, but rather it's the kohen himself. Koitzetz b'tziparnoi mimul ha'oyref. The kohen drives his nail into the back of the neck of the bird, and in doing so, he separates the head from the body. V'choytech he cuts mafarakte, the back of the vertebrae, whatever you call it for a bird, ad shemagia l'simonim, until it reaches the esophagus and trachea, which are called the signs. The koitzitzon, and he cuts them, he severs them. That's the way the bird is killed. Now this is totally different from typical shchita, because typical shchita is done in a manner of, it's horizontal, and it's across the neck. So it's done with something called helocha nava, the knife goes back and forth, and the neck is severed. So you're really, the neck, that's where the simonim are, that's where the signs are. So you sever the signs. Here, the kohen does not use a knife. Here the kohen uses his thumbnail, and the kohen has to kind of drive his thumbnail, or he's allowed to move like a cutting motion, but he has to go through the vertebrae, go through the neck of the bird, until he reaches the signs, and then he has to cut the signs of the animal. And that's what malika is, which obviously is very, very strange to us, because the kohen may sometimes eat these birds. They're called the korban chatas. If it's a korban chatas, hakoyanim oichlim baylim miskaprim, the kohen eats and the owners obtained Hashem's pardon, and if you were to kill such a bird and eat it, you were eating nevela, not kosher meat. But if the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, he said it's 100% kosher. Why is that, eh? It's a very, very unusual situation. So there's a lot to be said as to why a turtle dove, and why a pigeon. There's a famous Ramban about this. Balei HaTosfos have interesting things to say about that. Rabbi Yaakov Mevina says this is connected to Noach. Noach sending off the dove in his time. Anyway, there's a lot to say about that. But I want to focus our attention on the business of Malika. The business of the way, this very unusual way that the animal, the bird, is killed, different from Shechita. In fact, totally different from Shechita. So different that if you were to do this outside the Beis HaMikdash, a non-Kohen, it wouldn't be kosher altogether. It's only kosher in the Beis HaMikdash. But in the Beis HaMikdash, if they use a knife on the neck of the bird, that wouldn't be kosher either. So why is the bird brought as a korban so radically different than the way every other animal is killed in a kosher ritual way? So we have a long rumination from the Rebbe that we're going to focus on for the balance of this morning's class. And we're going to talk about Malika, this very unusual way that the animal, the bird, is killed on the Mizbeach. Page Yud Tes, in the Biurim book, this is the 14th entry, Siman Yud Dalad of Parshas Vayikra. Medivri Rashi, from the words of Rashi that we just studied together. So we can learn two things, two basic differences between what's called in Hebrew Malika and Shechita. Shechita is the typical slaughter that we're familiar with, and Malika is this very unusual slaughter. Aleph, number one, Shechita mizbatzas besaken. Shechita always requires a knife, a Shechita knife, and it's a very, very special knife, and it's made in a very unique way. It's honed to such precision that you could split a hair on it. And by the time the animal would feel anything, it's already dead. It's a quick, painless kind of killing of the animal. Extremely humane. Ve'ilu Malika, but when it comes to Malika, we learn, Rashi says the words, Ba'atzmei shel Kohen, it's the Kohen's hand itself. The Kohen's own thumb, fingernail, is being used. Number two, the Shechita is Bitzavar. The Shechita is always on the neck. If the Shechita is not on the neck, even if the Shechita is on the side of the neck, that's not kosher. Ve'ilu Malika, but Malika is Mimul Ha'irif. Malika is the exact opposite. It's the back of the neck. It's not the front of the neck, not the soft part of the neck where the simonim are easy to get to, but rather it's the back of the neck, the nape of the neck, and it's behind the vertebrae, and you have to kind of cut through the bone to be able to get.
Is it only defined for turtle doves and
pigeons? Only turtle doves and pigeons. That's the only kind of carbon you could bring of a bird. It depends. We talked about that before. The pigeon has to be young, and the turtle dove has to be mature. And it's very specific. So the Rebbe, in this particular rumination, sets out to explain this, the Ruchnis, from a spiritual perspective, in Avedas Habeda, in our service to God. So here is the backgrounder. Balei HaChayim, animals in general, can be Mischalkim L'Shleisha Kvutzeis Klolis. Animals, I'm not referring to insects here, or reptiles, but animals in general can be divided in three. Animals which are kosher, you could say. There are dogim, there are fish. There are oifis, fowl, birds. And then finally, there are behemoths. There are large animals. Shalosha kavutzes elo, these three kinds of animals, makbilos, that Rebbe suggests, are in parallel to shalosha sugim shal yehudim, to three different kinds of Jewish people. What kind of Jewish people? Not by virtue of birth, not by virtue of nature, by virtue of achievement in Avedas Hashem. The three kinds of people are tzaddikim, beinanim, and rishayim. The tzaddik is the holy, righteous individual. The beinani is the person who struggles, but has a perfect scorecard. The rasha, the person who maybe struggles, but fails. And he doesn't behave right all the time, and sometimes almost never. And that's just three kinds of Jews that you plug yourself in one of those categories. So this Avedas Hashem nomenclature is parallel to the animal nomenclature that we're using here. Let's talk about fish. Where are fish found? Fish are always found in water. What happens if fish are taken out of the water? A fish out of water is dead. A fish can't live out of water. Why? The water is considered the Mekar Chayusim. That's their source of life. Mayad Shepershim, immediately as soon as they separate, Mason, they die, like the famous words of Rabbi Akiva, the Papas, who said to him, why do you study Torah for? You're afraid of being caught. If you stop studying Torah, you won't be caught. And Rabbi Akiva's answer to him was that the fish were afraid of the fisherman's net. So the fox said, come on dry land with me. You won't be caught in the net. To which the fish responded, if we're in the water, we may be caught, we may survive. If we come out of the water, we're dead. So if a Jew studies Torah in a time of persecution, he may be persecuted. If he stops studying Torah, he won't be a Jew anymore. So this is the notion that the fish must always be connected to their source. And therefore, hey mahava mashal tzadikim, they serve as a metaphor, a parable for the woolly righteous. Hashruyim bedveikos masmedes bebeira. What makes a tzadik? Not euphemistic, you're such a tzaddik. Not talking about that. What makes a person really a tzaddik? What's the definition of somebody who is really righteous? No yitzhara. Well, no yitzhara. And so what are they doing all the time? They're always cleaving to Hashem. They don't disconnect from Hashem for even a moment. That's the nature of tzaddikim. Much like the fish that are always in the water. Can't live without being in the water. Habehemis. Gases v'chumrius, animals are animals, crass, coarse, grubby. Davar hamizbata bekach shem biyecholtem l'reimim l'hagbi esatzim el aris. Animals can't fly. You'll pardon the pun. Is there some kind of euphemism? Pigs don't fly or something? When pigs fly, huh? They're earthbound. They're earthbound creatures. They're stuck to the earth. The earth represents geshem, represents materiality. The earth represents earthiness, the lowest common denominator. And animals are stuck on the earth. They can't go anywhere. Therefore, they comprise a parable for wicked people who are stuck in the muck on the earth. They can't get to lift themselves. They are, if you will, in the hands, captives in the hands of the Yetzer Hara. A person who is wholly wicked is a slave to his or her impulses, not able to control themselves, can't lift themselves out of a situation, is always following their evil inclination, is always simply moving in a direction of whatever impulse they have, regardless of whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, moral or immoral. He's got an impulse. As such, he's going to do what his impulse is. Ha'ayfis chayim on the malaya basha. Birds do not live in the deep sea. They do live on dry land. However, heim me'udonim yeser. They are a little more refined. They're less earthy, if you will, than animals. And this is seen in their ability to take wings. This can fly. In other words, lehisreimim alei abasha. The bird can lift off from the dry land. Lo'if, to fly ba'aver in the atmosphere. And it can lift off from earth, l'zman meshech ma, for sometimes significant portions of time. V'lochein him ha'avim mashal ha'beinonim. They are the perfect metaphor for the beinoni. What's the beinoni? The beinoni is the person who is much like the rasha, because in the end he's stuck with the Yetzer Hara. He can't get rid of him. He lives with him. The Yetzer Hara is always there, sniping at him, trying to trip him. However, ach mipam l'pam, there are times, like for example, like the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya during davening, the time of tefillah, a person can take wings. He can lift himself and extricate himself from his earthy and fleshy situation. He can transcend the Yetzer Hara and all of its desires. And he can lift himself off. He can, so to speak, be in a higher place. During prayer, the Beinoni can, in principle, lift himself up to be close to the Creator. He can actually separate himself. He can look like a tzaddik even. You look at the Beinoni, you say, wow, it's a tzaddik. He's totally elevated. He's connected to his source. And this is the reason that behemoth and eifes chayav b'shchita. This is the reason that animals and birds require shchita. They have to be slaughtered. Fish don't have to be slaughtered. They just have to be caught. Because tafkidim shel shchita, the purpose of the shchita is l'reimim es bal chayim, it's to elevate the animal. L'natkoi midargosu hanechusa, to separate, to cut it from to separate it from, to truncate it from its low level. So if an animal is going to die slowly, that's called a teifa. That's no good. The animal has to be slaughtered, and by slaughtering it, we remove it from its animalistic reality, and it's, so to speak, replaced or repositioned in a higher reality, to a daga of kedusha. That's how we're able to elevate it. So the shechita is a form of it. It's the initial form of elevation. In the end, the person still has to prepare the meat to make it kosher, which is a very onerous process. And then after even preparing it, which is onerous, and you have kosher meat finally, and all the blood's removed and so on and so forth, what has to happen then? Then you have to eat like a yid. You have to make a bracha first. And after you make a bracha, you have to not get too caught up in the food. Remember, you're eating for a higher purpose. And then you actually have to do something higher with the energy you get from it. And only then can you really elevate the bird. But the entry into elevation is the shechita. If it's not slaughtered in a kosher way, nothing you do later will make a difference. It'll be stuck. So this shechita, where does it take place? The shechita happens, so to speak, on the neck of the animal. Chituch hatzaver. That's the inside of the animal. It's the front of the animal. Toich sheha'oyref nisha b'shleimus. The back remains intact. The neck of the animal is not touched. It's only the front of the animal that, if you will, is compromised or severed. The front of the animal, that's where the shechita is. Haponim v'ha'oyref, front and back, the neck and the nape. The misablum shnei sugim shel avodas Hashem. They represent two very different dimensions in our serving of God. Haponim, the face, this represents avodah hamavuseses al yediyah v'havana. It represents serving Hashem in a way that I self-identify with the service. The way that I can appreciate what's being asked of me. I get it. I understand it. I know it. I appreciate it. I identify with it. And because of that, I get really passionate about this. I get into my performance of mitzvahs. Shahavedu belev shalom. I serve Hashem wholeheartedly. Umetech his daos ishis and out of personal identification. Ha'oyref, the neck, correspondingly, represents avodas Hashem, serving Hashem, hamavuseses, which is based on kabbalas el malchus shemayim, the acceptance of the proverbial yoke of heaven. It represents kfiya atzmais, it represents forcing oneself, not identifying with a mitzvah, not appreciating or relating to the mitzvah, not doing it because it speaks or sings to me, but because I have to. Because I bow my head in submission. Because like the ox, I wear the yoke. Where does the ox wear the yoke? On the back of the neck, exactly. And we also know this idea of we the Jewish people are called in the Torah portion of Yuxio, kshei erev, stiff necked, right? And that's because we don't want to accept the yoke. And we're rebellious. A rebellious Jew is called a stiff necked Jew, a kshei erev Jew. And that's nature. It's nature to be obstinate. It's nature not to want to change. It's unnatural to say, okay, I'm going to do what I don't want to do, what I don't like to do, because I believe that's the right thing to do. That means going against one nature. So anoshim shem b'chinas oifu behema, people who are metaphorized as the birds or the animals, the beinanim and the reshoyim, you know, the in-betweeners and the actually wicked people. You can't follow your heart. You can't follow your intuition. So this feels like a mitzvah to me. This feels like a good thing to do. I think I'm going to do this. Or I'm not really comfortable with that. I don't think I'm going to do it. They say, but we really don't care what you're comfortable with. The question is what the Shulchan Aruch says. What the code of Jewish law is, that's what you should do. Not what you like or don't like. Because your own issues, your own personal interest and the will of the Torah are not one and the same. And therefore, avodas Hashem for these people is not face, but rather back of the neck. Acceptance, obedience, doing what Hashem wants. V'lachein avodas shalahem, tzarech lehizbases, their avoda, the foundation of their avoda, and the thing that continues to fuel their avoda, right? The ikra and sharsha is the concept of Kabbalah sil. And that's the meaning of shechita. Shechita means you cut the neck. Shechita means when a person is going to serve Hashem in a personal way, shechita means that you, so to speak, you have to cut or sever or do away with, I don't like this. This doesn't work for me. I don't understand this. Get rid of that. That's the shechita. That has to be slaughtered. That has to be removed. Instead, what does a yid say? A yid says, what does Hashem want? There's this nasa. The foundation is, I will do. I will be obedient. So that's the rule. And that works. That's the rule. Fish don't need shechita. They're always connected. Fish are refined to begin with. Animals and birds need shechita. What do you cut? What do you sever? What do you have to get rid of? The eye. The ego. I don't like this. I do like this, etc. But there is one exception to this rule. What exception is that? That's the bird in the Beis HaMikdash. The bird in the Beis HaMikdash. He represents a Beinoni who is already in flight. He represents the Beinoni who is already, so to speak, he's engaged, like in prayer. And because the Beinoni, when he's in prayer, he mimics the Tzaddik, so there we could rely on the way he feels, because his own ego has become entirely, if you will, transparent. He's gone, he's transcended his ego. And it's not about him anymore, but now he's like the tzaddik. What he identifies with is actually the will of Hashem. And because of this, in this kind of situation, the Beinoni serves Hashem out of a total dveikus, total cleaving. He does identify fully with the will of Hashem. There's no reason to get rid of the neck there. And therefore, how do we elevate it further? The answer is malika, the back of the neck. This is the part that gets, so to speak, totally removed or broken. But what remains is his passion, his fervor, the Beinoni's avodah, the Beinoni's commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time of prayer. And that's why it has to be done ba'atzmei shel kohen. And this explains the second detail. Not with a knife, but rather with the hand, the thumb, the person of the kohen. Why? Because a kohen over the Beis HaMikdash is considered to be a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a discussion in the Gemara, whose representative is he? Shlucha Didan or Shlucha Drachmana? Is he our representative or is he God's representative? And therefore, Pa'ulas HaMalika, the effect of removing the animal from the back, the head of the bird from the back of his neck, Ba'atzmei shel kohen, l'lo yafrada shel kli, without using any instrument or vessel, this represents the dveikos and the achdus hamaleya, represents the full cleaving to Hashem, the face-to-face cleaving, which happens by a Beinoni when the Beinoni is in service, when the Beinoni is in the midst of an offering, when the Beinoni is doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And that gives us some insight into the business of Malika versus the idea of the Shechita and the offerings that take wings. Very nice. So, inasmuch as this Sukkim are hard and challenging for us to identify with, at least you learn something like this, it helps you understand details of the Beis HaMikdash and the details of the offerings in a way that's very personal that we can identify, understand, and appreciate.